Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Katie Britton. Jeff Gwynn has captivated readers with his historical fiction novels, The Autobiography of Santa Claus, and Go Down Together, The True Untold Story of Bonnie and Clyde, as well as his nonfiction work on Charles Manson and the OK Corral. Now, in his newest historical fiction trilogy, beginning with Glorious, Gwynn takes a look at the silver prospectors of the late 1800s in the Arizona Territory.
Well, what I wanted to do was I wanted to go back and help readers revisit a really unique time in American history. I love historical fiction of all kinds. And when I was writing The Last Gunfight a couple of years ago, and that was nonfiction, that's when I really understood, I think, for the first time, just how rich and diverse the history of the frontier was. And while it's great to do that in nonfiction, to try to go there and recapture it, in fiction you get the opportunity to really take readers to the heart of the whole era. You can bring them the atmosphere, and you can use different characters to represent things. And, of course, in nonfiction, you've got a certain chronological order you've got to follow. In nonfiction, what I love to do is take the real history and try to present it in a very entertaining way for the reader.
So where did you begin your research for this book?
Well, oddly enough, I began it on the side of a mountain. I chose to set Glorious in 1872 in Arizona Territory, because that was a very interesting time in that region. That's when really the silver and gold prospecting opened up, as the Apache were sort of driven more to the southeast corner of the territory. But I thought, if I want readers to really feel what it's like to be out there with a hammer and a pick and a pack, you know, to get that sense of what it really was like prospecting, I had to try it myself. And frankly, it ain't easy. With gold, you think, well, if I'm going out to prospect for gold, I'll see shiny stuff and I can just pick it up. But in this region, they were looking for silver. And with silver, you don't actually see anything shiny. You just kind of have to look at rock faces and see little squiggly black lines. So among other things, on the side of the mountain, I tried to knock off some rock chips to get them assayed and hurt my arm hitting the rock. I slipped, fell down the side of the mountain, and fell rear-end first into a saguaro cactus. So when I say I've got my blood in this story, I do. It was such a hard, harsh place to be, and yet you had these incredibly courageous people who were going out there to make their living. I wanted to capture that spirit in the novel.
And you really do, just from the very beginning of the book, where you have a group of prospectors going out because they have learned you do not go out alone in case the Apache come and kidnap them and kill them. But you have us sitting there on the side of the mountain with him and trying to figure out if this is a good place to go. And just the heat of the Arizona desert is one of the first things you're thinking, oh my gosh, I can't imagine sitting out for hours a day. And the prospector's also thinking of his family because he wants to be able to send money home to his wife and two daughters.
See, that's one of the things I think we lose in sort of the one-dimensional cliches of the West. We see all these sort of heroic people, very unconflicted. The protagonist can outshoot and outfight anybody. The people who came west were trying desperately to find better lives. And so I wanted to set the scene immediately in the book that here you've got somebody who, yes, he's out there trying to strike it rich, but he's really just trying to feed a family back east. And the Indians are a big part of the frontier. The thing is, again, it's not like the movie cliches where 20,000 of them come boiling up over a hill. Usually, you didn't see the Indians until they got you, and there was that whole sense of dread, of menace, that has to be with everybody during every waking minute. So there's so many things to capture, and writing a novel is hopefully an entertaining way to do that for readers, and at the same time, maybe move them beyond the cliched westerns. I guess I'd call Glorious a non-traditional traditional Western.
That's an excellent way to put it, especially with our main character, Cash, because he is not who you expect to find in a town called Glorious. And of course, when we think Glorious and whenever anybody thinks American Western, we're thinking, you know, the saloon and the dirt road going through and it being quite prosperous, but Glorious is anything but. And Cash finds that out as soon as he gets to the depot in Florence.
Well, I guess I wanted a protagonist who was as flawed as most of us would be if we went out there. You know, absolutely unprepared for where he finds himself and having to learn fast just to survive. And out in the territories, little tiny towns sprang up, and they usually were gone within months. I mean, there'd be a few brave people hoping maybe we'll find silver, maybe we'll find gold. They don't. They move on. Everything that was there just kind of vanishes in the dust and the wind. And the other thing, though, that I really wanted to do in this book, Katie, was in Western fiction, generally women are depicted in one of three ways. You've either got your nasty little old granny with a shotgun ready to shoot anybody. You've got your prostitute with a heart of gold. Or you've got your virtuous, sweet schoolmarm who falls for the sheriff and they ride off into the sunset in the last chapter. Women in the West were not weak, simpering creatures, absolutely dependent on the goodwill of men to survive. The women of the frontier were smarter and tougher than any of the men were. And that was another wonderful thing in writing Glorious. I wanted to present the women of the frontier as they really were, as opposed to caricatures.
You do capture that. And Cash has followed out Gabrielle. And Gabrielle, while she comes from St. Louis, everybody has a past. And the beauty of it is that you have your characters say, well, we don't ask about their history because that's not what's important.
There was, in the 1860s and 70s, a very popular folk song in America. And the folk song was titled, What Was Your Name in the States? Because almost everybody who came out to the territories was coming there to reinvent themselves. And Gabrielle, having been spurned by Cash in St. Louis, has gone out to Glorious in the frontier with her aging father to try and reinvent themselves as merchants in a small town. And he comes there convinced he's going to rescue her from this hellhole. And in fact, she's made a good life there and doesn't need rescuing at all. I want to surprise readers. I want to keep them entertained. I want to keep them enthralled. I want a lot of action in the book. But I want it to be more realistic than the let's draw, you know, in a gunfight at high noon on Main Street, because it just didn't happen that way.
And you also have Mary Somebody and then the other women also who are in the saloon. And Ella, as you say, they are very strong characters and we can see their minds ticking as they're interacting with the other people.
One of the things I was told when I started writing Western fiction, this is a series, the first in the series, several people said, well, don't even worry about women readers, just write for men because women don't read Western fiction. I don't know that that's true, but if it is true, I think it's because women might feel insulted by the way a lot of the female characters are presented. I had so much fun sort of creating in my imagination these entertaining, colorful female cast members who essentially move the action of the book. I hope that readers like them too. I'm very fond of them. And even though they're just products of my imagination at this point, they seem real to me.
We were talking about the setting, and I have to say, when Cash comes up to the elite hotel, and I love the fact that it's unfinished and that people are warning him, well, you know, it's not really what you may think with the elite hotel, but it was just so enjoyable having him interact with the proprietor, Major Mulkins, and have him saying, well, you know, windows are expensive. And so when the town starts to prosper, we'll be able to get windows to get that second floor in.
That is actually, you know, that's something that I picked up in reading some of the newspapers at the time. And whatever town survived, if they had a little town newspaper and the hotels would take out ads, they would say things like four rooms with real glass windows. And this was a sign of prosperity. And if you were trying to put up a hotel, gradually build it in a little tiny prospecting town, that would be your dream, to have glass windows in every room. And again, we can call on real history to lend an extra dimension to historical fiction, I think. And I want to promise readers that when you read Glorious, whenever you see little details, I've done all that I can to make sure that they're absolutely accurate to reflect the time and the place.
You have crafted it so well. Jeff, it's been a pleasure, as always, speaking with you, and I look forward to talking to you about the next one.
Thank you so much, Katie, and best to all of your listeners.
Again, Jeff Gwynn's newest historical fiction novel is Glorious. It is published by Putnam. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.